Chapter 12. Few days before S, he had temporarily silenced it by borrowing $20 of Miss Mellon's. The transaction had cost her one of the bitterest struggles of her life. S, he had never borrowed a penny of anyone before, and the possibility of having to do so had always been classed in her mind among those shameful extremities to which Providence does not let decent people come. But nowadays she no longer believed in the personal supervision of Providence, and had she been compelled to steal the money instead of borrowing it, she would have felt that her conscience was the only tribunal before which S. he had to answer. Nevertheless, the actual humiliation of having to ask for the money was no less bitter, and she could hardly hope that Miss Mellons would view the case with the same detachment as herself. Miss Mellons was very kind, but she not unnaturally felt that her kindness should be rewarded by according her the right to ask questions. And bit by bit Ann Eliza saw Evelina's miserable secret slipping into the dressmaker's possession. When the doctor came, she left him alone with Evelina, busying herself in the shop, that she might have an opportunity of seeing him alone on his way out. To steady herself, she began to sort a trayful of buttons, and when the doctor appeared, she was reciting under her breath :24 horn, 2½ cards fancy pearl. But she saw at once that his look was grave. He sat down on the chair beside the counter, and her mind traveled miles before he spoke. "Miss Bunner, the best thing you can do is to let me get a bed for your sister at St. Luke's." "The hospital? Come now, you're above that sort of prejudice, aren't you?" The doctor spoke in the tone of one who coaxes a spoiled child. "Know how devoted you are, but Mrs. Ramey can be much better cared for there than here. You really haven't time to look after her and attend to your business as well. There'll be no expense, you understand?" Ann Eliza made no answer. "Who think my sister's going to be sick a good while then?" she asked. "Well, yes, possibly." "You think she's very sick?" "Well, yes. She's very sick." His face had grown still graver. He sat there, as though he had never known what it was to hurry. Ann Eliza continued to separate the pearl and horn buttons. Suddenly she lifted her eyes and looked at him. "Is she going to die?" The doctor laid a kindly hand on hers. "He never say that, Miss Bunner. Human skill works wonders, and at the hospital Mrs. Ramey would have every chance." "What is it? What's she dying of?" The doctor hesitated, seeking to substitute a popular phrase for the scientific terminology which rose to his lips. "I want to know," Ann Eliza persisted. "Yes, of course. I understand. Well, your sister has had a hard time lately, and there is a complication of causes, resulting in rapid consumption. At the hospital, I'll keep her here," said Ann Eliza quietly. After the doctor had gone, she went on for some time sorting the buttons. Then she slipped the tray into its place on a shelf behind the counter and went into the back room. She found Evelina propped upright against the pillows, a flush of agitation on her cheeks. Ann Eliza pulled up the shawl which had slipped from her sister's shoulders. "How long you've been? What's he been saying?" "Oh, he went long ago. He only stopped to give me a prescription. I was sorting out that tray of buttons. Miss Mellon's girl got them all mixed up." She felt Evelina's eyes upon her. "He must have said something." "What was it?" "Why, he said you'd have to be careful and stay in bed and take this new medicine he's given you." "Did he say I was going to get well?" "Why, Evelina." "What's the use, Ann Eliza? You can't deceive me. I've just been up to look at myself in the glass, and I saw plenty of them in the hospital that looked like me. They didn't get well, and I ain't going to." Her head dropped back. "Tea don't much matter, I'm about tired. Only there's one thing, Ann Eliza," the elder sister drew near to the bed. "There's one thing I ain't told you. I didn't want to tell you yet because I was afraid you might be sorry, but if he says I'm going to die, I've got to say it." She stopped to cough, and to Ann Eliza it now seemed as though every cough struck a minute from the hours remaining to her. Don't talk now, you're tired. I'll be here tomorrow, I guess. And I want you should know. Sit down close to me there. Annalisa sat down in silence, stroking her shrunken hand. I'm a Roman Catholic, Annalisa. Evelina, oh, Evelina Bunner. A Roman Catholic, you? Oh, Evelina, did he make you? Evelina shook her head. Guess he didn't have no religion. He never spoke of it. But you see, Mrs. Hochmiller was a Catholic, and so when I was sick, she got the doctor to send me to a Roman Catholic hospital, and the sisters was so good to me there, and the priest used to come and talk to me, and the things he said kept me from going crazy. He seemed to make everything easier. Oh, sister, how could you? Annalisa wailed. She knew little of the Catholic religion except that Apists believed in it in itself a sufficient indictment. Her spiritual rebellion had not freed her from the formal part of her religious belief, and apostasy had always seemed to her one of the sins from which the pure in mind avert their thoughts. And then when the baby was born, Evelina continued, he christened it right away, so it could go to heaven. And after that, you see, I had to be a Catholic. I don't see, don't I have to be where the baby is? I couldn't ever have gone there if I hadn't been made a Catholic. Don't you understand that? Annalisa sat speechless, drawing her hand away. Once more she found herself shut out of Evelina's heart, an exile from her closest affections. I've got to go where the baby is, Evelina feverishly insisted. Annalisa could think of nothing to say. She could only feel that Evelina was dying, and dying as a stranger in her arms. Remy and the day-old baby had parted her forever from her sister. Evelina began again. If I get worse, I want you to send for a priest. Miss Mellon's'll know where to send. She's got an aunt that's a Catholic. Promise me faithful you will. I promise, said Annalisa. After that they spoke no more of the matter, but Annalisa now understood that the little black bag about her sister's neck, which she had innocently taken for a memento of Remy, was some kind of sacrilegious amulet, and her fingers shrank from its contact when she bathed and dressed Evelina. It seemed to her the diabolical instrument of their estrangement. Zee, spring had really come at last. There were leaves on the ailanthus tree that Evelina could see from her bed. Gentle clouds floated over it in the blue, and now and then the cry of a flower seller sounded from the street. One day there was a shy knock on the back room door, and Johnny Hawkins came in with two yellow jonquils in his fist. He was getting bigger and squarer, and his round freckled face was growing into a smaller copy of his father's. He walked up to Evelina and held out the flowers. They blew off the card and the fellow said I could keep them. But you can have them, he announced. Annalisa rose from her seat at the sewing machine and tried to take the flowers from him. They ain't for you, they're for her, he sturdily objected. And Evelina held out her hand for the jonquils. After Johnny had gone, she lay and looked at them without speaking. Annalisa, who had gone back to the machine, bent her head over the seam she was stitching. The click, click, click of the machine sounded in her ear like the tick of Remy's clock, and it seemed to her that life had gone backward, and that Evelina, radiant and foolish, had just come into the room with the yellow flowers in her hand. When at last she ventured to look up, she saw that her sister's head had drooped against the pillow, and that she was sleeping quietly. Her relaxed hand still held the jonquils, but it was evident that they had awakened no memories, as he had dozed off almost as soon as Johnny had given them to her. The discovery gave Annalisa a startled sense of the ruins that must be piled upon her past. Don't believe I could have forgotten that day, though, she said to herself. But she was glad that Evelina had forgotten. Evelina's disease moved on along the usual course, now lifting her on a brief wave of elation, now sinking her to new depths of weakness. There was little to be done, and the doctor came only at lengthening intervals. On his way out, he always repeated his first friendly suggestion about sending Evelina to the hospital, And Anna Lisa always answered, colon, I guess we can manage. The hours passed for her with the fierce rapidity that great joy or anguish lends them. She went through the days with a sternly smiling precision, but she hardly knew what was happening, and when nightfall released her from the shop, and she could carry her work to Evelina's bedside, the same sense of unreality accompanied her, and she still seemed to be accomplishing a task whose object had escaped her memory. Once, when Evelina felt better, she expressed a desire to make some artificial flowers, and Anna Lisa, deluded by this awakening interest, got out the faded bundles of stems and petals, and the little tools and spools of wire. But after a few minutes the work dropped from Evelina's hands, and she said, colon, I'll wait until tomorrow. She never again spoke of the flower making, but one day, after watching Anna Lisa's labored attempt to trim a spring hat for Mrs. Hawkins, she demanded impatiently that the hat should be brought to her, and in a trice had galvanized the lifeless bow, and given the brim the twist it needed. These were rare gleams, and more frequent were the days of speechless lassitude, when she lay for hours silently staring at the window, shaken only by the hard incessant cough that sounded to Anna Lisa like the hammering of nails into a coffin. At length one morning Anna Lisa, starting up from the mattress at the foot of the bed, hastily called Miss Mellins down, and ran through the smoky dawn for the doctor. He came back with her, and did what he could to give Evelina momentary relief. Then he went away, promising to look in again before night. Miss Mellins, her head still covered with curl papers, disappeared in his wake, and when the sisters were alone Evelina beckoned to Anna Lisa. You promised, she whispered, grasping her sister's arm, and Anna Lisa understood. As he had not yet dared to tell Miss Mellins of Evelina's change of faith, it had seemed even more difficult than borrowing the money, but now it had to be done. She ran upstairs after the dressmaker, and detained her on the landing. Miss Mellins, can you tell me where to send for a priest, a Roman Catholic priest? A priest, Miss Bunner? Yes. My sister became a Roman Catholic while she was away. They were kind to her in her sickness, and now she wants a priest. Anna Lisa faced Miss Mellins with unflinching eyes. My Aunt Dugan'll know. I'll run right round to her the minute I get my papers off, the dressmaker promised. And Anna Lisa thanked her. An hour or two later the priest appeared. Anna Lisa, who was watching, saw him coming down the steps to the shop door, and went to meet him. His expression was kind, but she shrank from his peculiar dress, and from his pale face with its bluish chin and enigmatic smile. Anna Lisa remained in the shop. Miss Mellon's girl had mixed the buttons again, and she set herself to sort them. The priest stayed a long time with Evelina. When he again carried his enigmatic smile past the counter, and Anna Lisa rejoined her sister, Evelina was smiling with something of the same mystery, but she did not tell her secret. After that it seemed to Anna Lisa that the shop and the back room no longer belonged to her. It was as though she were there on sufferance, indulgently tolerated by the unseen power which hovered over Evelina even in the absence of its minister. The priest came almost daily, and at last a day arrived, when he was called to administer some rite of which Anna Lisa but dimly grasped the sacramental meaning. All she knew was that it meant that Evelina was going, and going, under this alien guidance, even farther from her than to the dark places of death. When the priest came, with something covered in his hands, she crept into the shop, closing the door of the back room to leave him alone with Evelina. It was a warm afternoon in May, and the crooked ailanthus tree rooted in a fissure of the opposite pavement was a fountain of tender green. Women in light dresses passed with the languid step of spring, and presently there came a man with a handcart full of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.